Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bonjour.
Hi, baby.
Hello, my love.
Ready to talk about sex and a bunch of other stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
How are you?
Okay, hang on 1 second. I want to be honest with you when I answer
with
that.
Me or with the listener?
With you and with the listeners. Okay. I'm only really talking to you.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're never really truly honest with the listeners.
No. This is all a performance.
It's all a sham.
How am I? I'm good. You know what? I was actually kind of nervous to record today. Like like 30 minutes ago, I was feeling butterflies in my stomach. Like we're like live show quality butterflies.
Well, can I start this with something? So obviously there's a lot of people who, excuse me, it's burped. It's fucking bubbly, man. Bubbly water. It's so yummy, but it makes me burp so much. I shouldn't be drinking it while we record.
No.
So there's a lot of people that tune into the podcast weekly and they expect the podcast to drop every Wednesday, every hump day. Mm-hmm. And last week there was no episode, and I probably should have did something to, like, you know, even put something on our social media, but I really just wasn't. I just really didn't. I just needed to, like, get away from everything, I think, and so I didn't. But the reason why we did not put up an episode last week was because your father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll start with that.
Okay.
So I just want the listeners to know that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we're probably going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good... You know what? Thank you for saying that, because I was thinking about... I was knowing we were going to have a conversation about it that would, you know, be on the podcast. And actually, I think that's really great, because, you know, I came to PEI a couple of months ago with recording gear so that we could still do our thing. And while I had it, I did a bunch of recording of my dad. And I have no real, like, idea of what I'm going to make with what I captured, because it's not necessarily, like, interviews or him telling stories. It's all these different, like, clips. And I think it's, you know, I'm feeling really inspired to make something with everything, because I've also been writing. You know, I've also got, like, all of these random pieces of paper and bits of writing and, like, all of just, like, the scrapbook worthy stuff. And, you know, my grandmother always scrapbooked for me and my life. And I feel like there's going to be some processing that I do that will be in, like, scrapbooking form or, like, audio scrapbooking in a way. But when I was knowing we were going to be talking about this, I was like, oh God, this is, like, anybody who's new to the podcast and is like, where's the sexy time conversation? Yeah, that's, like, a bit of a different tone, I suppose, but not really.
I mean, we're definitely going to talk about sexy time stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm good.
But also, there's other shit happening as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, 2020. Mm-hmm. Is fucking crazy, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, just bonkers. It's just a bonkers
time. Just keeps getting stranger and stranger and stranger. And,
it really does.
And there's this, like, there's just this feeling right now here in Atlanta, Canada, anyway, of, you know, in conflict over going back to work, like the phasing back in of like the old, I don't know. It feels like the phasing in of the old ways, because I think we're going to try to match the before time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just so desperately want people to remember that there's still much to prepare for.
In what sense?
In, like, there, you know, this, like, second wave, you know, right. All that kind of stuff. Like people being like, oh, okay, like, great. And we're going back to normal, and, like, not remembering things like that they may have, like, learned about themselves within the
process of this. Yeah.
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 Like, relationships kind of falling by the wayside, you know?
Have you noticed that? Have you noticed relationships falling by the wayside during this?
Because no.
I'm noticing the opposite.
I'm noticing the opposite.
Oh, I see what you mean. Once we go back to normal, the old ways, quote unquote,
yeah,
then potentially seeing a bunch of these relationships that have been rekindled or started anew or what have you, kind of falling by the wayside, because we've then fallen back into our...
We don't have the time.
Our busyness, our schedule, that, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I think that that's... I don't think that that's a universal thing across the board, but I definitely... I feel as though a lot of the people that I've been speaking with and spending my time with while I'm locked up here are having that same kind of experience of feeling more socially connected than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of like, I think people are really enjoying that part of this, you know, at least the people that I'm talking to. But yeah, you're right. I would hope not. I would hope that people go into like back to normal life, holding on to a sense of what they've like gained out of all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think about that. I think about that a lot.
Cause I feel like I feel like I'm trying not to make any like major life decisions in this time because everything is, you know, all up in the air. But at the same time, my imagination has never been so enticed by the like, what could it be question? Like if you rebuild your life, knowing what you know now, what could that look like? I don't know how else to put it than I think I brought this up in another episode, but Tara had this metaphor of like when it's all like crumbled, when like the whole thing's crumbled, what sprouts, like what grows from the rubble and the wreckage. And I've been feeling like actually quite inspired. Mm-hmm. And my dad was really positive about what's happening right now and the potential positive changes it could have in the world. So that was, you know, really nice to hear him say that as somebody who's not going to be a part of it, knowing he's not going to be a part of it, you know, because obviously my dad was sick, so
he didn't have any weird rapture theories or anything behind it.
No,
because I know your dad's like, your dad was a man of God, mm-hmm. and he liked the Bible, and he also liked to go off on these just like, man, he'd go off on these tangents, and I'm like, is he reciting like an old play, or is he just improvising right now? Because your dad's very much, your dad was such a, he's such an actor,
he's such a performer,
and like he would bust out into monologues like just because someone's around,
yeah.
And so I was wondering when all this was going down, I was like, I wonder if Bill's just like, if he's like got some vibe that like, you know, like the rapture's here, you know, no. And like the Lord's coming down to take us all up.
No, neither him. I never heard that conversation happening between my mom and dad. And they, you know, I'm sure my mom has thought about it. I'm sure my mom has wondered about that. But
right. No,
I think watching my dad come to terms with what was going on was actually very sweet. It was kind of like, first it was like, I want to go to the coffee shop though. And then like the rest of us, and then he couldn't. And then it was like, right. This is strange. And then I was listening actually to one of my recordings that I made of him, just on my voice memos on my phone. And he was saying, I think I really like the telephone. He's like, you can just not answer. You can leave a message if they're not there. I like reconnecting with the telephone. Like he spent a lot of time on the phone in the last year. Just like calling people. I have one of him talking to another well-known like theater person here on Prince Edward Island, basically saying like, there should be an award in each of our names. There should be a Bill McFadden award for, you know, whatever it is that's considered my greatest talent. And there would be like an Erskine Smith award. And Just like watching him.
Smith
like,
was your one of your dad's
good friends and
good yeah. friends and good rivals.
I'm gonna write that down because that's
who died a number of years ago on PEI. Big part of the theater world there.
Yeah.
Brad, you were saying, I know that like while this was all happening, I mean, it was really hard for me because I was here and I couldn't be there, and I really wanted to be here, as in Halifax, at our home. And you're over there on the island. But you were saying that it was like a really beautiful death. And
yeah.
Like the entire process of it all. Like can you speak to that a little bit? Because I find that very interesting. I've been doing these talks and these interviews lately virtually for work. And one of the things that has come up a couple of times has been this like discussion surrounding the topic of death, which is a big theme in a lot of my speaking engagements and stuff. And there's been a couple times where like the topic of like of normalizing the conversation surrounding death and how I go about that and why and yada yada. And I'm catching myself answering this question by talking about how, you know, I've been spending all this time trying to prepare everyone for my death and normalizing my death. But personally, I've always had a really fucking tough time with anybody else's death that isn't my own. So, you know, like when my friend Brandon died, just like when anyone dies who's like remotely close to me, it just like seems to really fuck me up, and I have a hard time like wrapping my head around it. And you had said something while all of this was happening that I found really interesting, and I kind of want to hear from you about that, because I selfishly like I want to take what you took from this process and like incorporate that into like I want to learn what you learned. And I don't remember verbatim what it was that you said, but it was something to the effect of like, you know, I really wish you were here to witness this, because there was something very profound about your father's death. Just the way that it all came to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious to know what that was for you, and like what did you learn from this experience of losing someone, you know, arguably like one of the closest people you've in your life, mm-hmm. which is something that you're not unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
Like close loss, you know?
The first thing I want to say is I've seen you grieve for people who have passed, and I don't think you have a hard time. I think that you are very moved when that happens. And, you know, I think when you said that, you're probably picturing or feeling or remembering like crying so hard that you're like wailing and you can't get it under control. I think something that I took from this experience was, I'm a crier. I can be a crier, and it can be really hard for me to talk about things that are important to me, or like when I'm moved, I cry. But I have this previous perception that wasn't okay, but it wasn't something I wanted to do in front of people. I didn't want to really feel that feeling because it's like, you know, seems inappropriate or I don't even know what it is, because I'm not ashamed about crying or feel, and nor do I feel that it's weak, but I don't want to necessarily let other people see me in that vulnerable state. I'd like to cry and wail freely, actually, and experience this, but I feel like I almost have to protect the other person from that. So this time I didn't fight myself on the tears ever. And they would come and they would move through me. And I did a lot of moving. I did a lot of like shaking my body, like, you know, in the last couple weeks, especially of his life when he was in the hospital and then in palliative care, I was spending a lot of time just like moving it through my body and sometimes making sounds when I cry and all of that kind of stuff. And I found it would just move and then it would end and then life would go on. And, that's kind of been happening. Well, that welling up has happened a lot over since his diagnosis at the end of January. And then in the last couple of weeks when I was seeing part of death, because I saw him every single day that I was here, something like 47 days, and then he went into the hospital, and there were 5 days before I could go into the hospital to see him because of COVID. And then he was allowed one visitor, so I was his person, and then I visited him 4 days in a row in the hospital before he got moved to palliative. And then he was in palliative for 2 days and passed away. I forget what I was saying. So moving a lot, allowing the emotion to come through. In the last couple of weeks, as I saw things about death that I've never seen before.
Like what?
This is... When I first got here, I was like, my dad looks old. And then in the last 2 weeks, it was like every day I would leave being like, how much closer to death can you look and still be alive? And
it's pretty wild how different he looked. Like, I mean, even when I saw him last, which was...
Every day. Yeah. And, his I think a lot, like, I saw a lot of his skeleton, which was, just like, it was like, our bones are so small. Our bones are so thin. He was so thin, and just, so that everybody listening, knows that my dad was so peaceful about what was happening. He was ready to go. He was not scared, not once, and I'm actually going to speak about that again in a minute too, because he was going to a good place. So he was really observing, and I have some really funny voicemails saved from him, which is like, I don't know, my feet seem fine today but I can't stop pooping. Just like observing and writing notes but every day I would come in and it was like death came again today and took a little bit more. And then, I'd read about this, a person will stop eating, which he did like 2.5 weeks before he died. He's really like just wasn't eating anymore. They may start, he kept miming that he was taking a drink of water. Like there was nothing in his hands, but he would mime that he was taking his pills and swallowing water. And he would be asking me to set the glass down. So that's like another telltale sign. And again, that was happening for about 2.5 weeks as well, right around the same time he stopped eating.
What do you mean? Like miming to signal to you, like, because he wasn't communicating, or
he
literally just thought he was drinking.
Mm-hmm. And he was that,
holy fuck.
Yeah. That was when if he was taking a lot of Dilaudid, you know, but that's common. His feet were, I spent a lot of time, like, I gave him foot soaks, I gave him a foot massages in the hospital, from laying in the bed after he laid in a bed for a week. His heels were all cracked and broken up, and I massaged his feet and put in cream on his feet, and just, like, the feet get cold and the feet get sore. That is another sign. And then I watched him respond to me less and less and only respond to the healthcare providers. And then after that, you know, a couple of days, the day he moved to palliative, they called me in and they thought he was going to die that night. And he woke up and had a full, like, reached his arms over his head and, like, stretched out and, like, had a full volume conversation. And then kind of went to sleep and never really opened his eyes again. And that was, you know, there was this 2 days where he didn't open his eyes, which I had seen too with my grandfather, like, very much they're unconscious. But then someone on the morning, so he died at noon, and on that morning, someone came to the window, someone who hadn't been there, and he heard her voice, and he started making noise, a little bit of noise. And I could feel him move, like, I could feel him move his body, which was, like, the most he had responded to anything in a day and a half. And, you know, I was with him for so much of it, and, you know, I was just making guesses, like, is it okay if I put music on? This was music he liked at the house. But when he left the house for the hospital, he really left behind, like, he didn't want to take anything to the hospital, like, things that I thought were important and, like, meaningful to him, like, I don't know, just even his slippers or like a book that he had been reading. And sure enough, he got into the hospital and he never touched a thing in the suitcase. He was really, like, letting go. I watched him remove a bracelet when I first got here. I was just watching him letting go of his, like, personal effects, of his personal belongings. It was just like he was really ready to leave all the earthly stuff behind. And once he got into palliative and they were like, he's probably going to pass away tonight, you can have up to 5 people here that are allowed to come in and physically see him. And my brother, he has a family and he hadn't been around, I've been here every day, he all of a sudden showed up, and it was basically he and my other brother, another brother, and I switching out. I slept there both nights, and my brother, who was, like, just, you know, also emotional, but letting it come move through him and process it and let it happen as it was happening. But we sat there, and for the last 2 days, I mean, this is really stuff I are the images that are starting to flood my head now, like, that I have, are, like, in the last couple of days, like, knowing that he could still hear and had, in a large part, chosen not to respond anymore to me anyway. And I felt really good about that. And, like, I feel really great about that I was there all the time. And maybe even if I was annoying him sometimes, like, I think this is okay, I think Dad would like this, you know, and hopefully I wasn't keeping it too heavy in the room. I wasn't doing any of my crying and sobbing in there. I was, like, keeping that out in the kitchen at palliative care. What a fucking special place. The nurses there are just like, they're like, yeah, it sucks, but they're so positive and, like, what an incredible place to pass. It looked, he called himself Billy more and more and more over the last, like, when he was talking to himself and, like, encouraging himself to go easy, go slow down, Billy. It seemed like what he needed was to be coached, like, in a very maternal kind of way.
Do you think, like, I've been thinking about this a lot. I think because of just the timing of, like, the timing of a lot of things, you know, the things that I've been watching and things that I've been listening to, and your father, and things that I've been having conversations about. But I've been thinking a lot more lately than I normally would about what happens after we die, and, like, and you know, just like just like existential thoughts of, maybe I'm using that word wrong. What does existential mean?
Yeah, I think it's like existence.
Yeah, right. So yeah, like existential thoughts about after we're dead.
Yeah. Well.
And like, have that? Has any of what you've experienced, like, has that come up? Have those thoughts come up for you, or
like life after? Where's my dad right now?
Yeah, not where's your dad right now. I mean, sure, if you want to, if that's what that means to you, but like, yeah, like, where's your dad's soul? Where's your dad's?
Yeah,
where's the thing that made Billy Billy? You know, where's his energy? Where, like,
I mean, what I picture is like a diamond that I picture, it's very visual to me. I picture just this explosion of light.
Mm-hmm.
Like I picture that, like, I don't know. I picture like a spark just, this doesn't make any sense, but like shattering and becoming like atomic and filling up all of the space like a gas.
That makes 1,000% of sense to me. That is literally, to a T, the experience that I had when I smoked 5-MeO-DMT.
I think that is why I picture that. I think when you told me the story of what you experienced, it brought me a lot of... I remember weeping on the phone when you told me that story, and it comforted me. So it comforted that image I have, you know, who fucking knows? But that image of what it feels like, that it feels like liberation. I don't know when it happens, because I felt that my dad was receding. Like, he was getting further and further and further away from me. Mm. But I definitely... It was like this crossing. He was crossing over. And especially in the last couple of days, I was just like... He told me he was ready to go that time we took him to the hospital in Halifax 2 months ago. He thought he was going to die that night. And he wasn't even close based on what I saw, you know, and watching him, he's like, oh, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. And I when he stopped responding to me, I had this experience of like, okay, Dad, I said the same thing almost when he left the house for the hospital. Cause I didn't know if I was going to get to see him again. And that was a good day too. Of it's all you now. Like, this is as far as I can go. And today I realized that he asked for watermelon and I never brought it. It's like one of those waitress nightmares where you're like, wake up in the night and you go, fuck, I forgot. The guy wanted a side of watermelon. But yeah, so that's when I was just like, I feel like you're in there now. You're in there walking through it, still experiencing it, letting go and like trying to let go and trying to let go of everything earthly. Mm. Everything about being a human being. And, you know, I can tell you my shavasanas have been otherworldly since. But yeah, so I just, you know, I didn't read about doing this or necessarily even see the nurses doing this, but the things that my brother and I were saying to my dad were very like, you're doing a great job. Just working hard. And then he wanted a green burial, so we buried him the day after he died, and he didn't want to be embalmed or be buried in a casket. So he had put together all these plans that then I had to figure out how to execute. And the morning... in the palliative care room before my dad passed, you know, his breathing had changed again and his eyes had changed again. All of a sudden I could see the brown of his eyes again. And, you know, my brother and I were like, well, maybe we can put all the pieces together in this way. And that looks like having a parade. A parade of my dad displayed in his casket. It would have been close. He had this handmade casket built that he had wanted to then not be buried in, so that other people could use it because caskets are expensive. Mm. And there's this beautiful piece of art by a local guy. It cost him, you know, $500. And anyway, turned out all that was illegal. The parade we tried to orchestrate was illegal, but my God, we had so much fun laughing about it in the palliative room. Like, we were like, just, you could just hear my dad's voice getting excited about like, yes, and we'll get some flowers from here and we'll tell everybody, let's post it. And so we went into my dad's my dad's Facebook, which in retrospect, I probably should have warned people that I was that we were going to do. But my brother wrote this message from my dad's account being like, basically, we need a trailer for our parade. And my dad was still living at the time, but definitely not Facebooking. And so we got him. We put him in the. We did as much to form as we could, and it was all very swift. And he would have loved it. And then I zoomed my aunt and my two aunts from the States in to watch the burial. Where they you know my brothers. Everybody, we didn't fucking rehearse it, and the funeral home director.
It was really funny.
Which we had to involve. Yeah, we had to involve him legally.
I was on that Zoom call as well.
And he was like, maybe next time you should have a rehearsal. But so I'm on the Zoom call and I'm like realizing that I haven't prepared anyone for the fact that dad is just wrapped in a shroud.
When he popped up, I was like, holy fuck, Bill's just in that bag. He's just in like that.
This
cloth.
Is how he wanted. This is what he wanted.
And then that hole was so deep.
It was so deep. My brother jumps into the hole.
He jumps in did they drop him?
They handed it to my brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, we're social distancing.
I was watching it. I was literally watching it, going, oh my god, oh my god, this is happening. Like it was so it was very jarring, but also kind of beautiful, you know, like. And also, I was laughing because I was like, "I'm on a fucking Zoom funeral.
Yeah,
I'm Zooming a funeral. This is this is the fucking time we live in."
Well, I mean, it's so crazy. It's so crazy, and I'm so. And then for the whole next day, I was like biting my nails, being like, "I shocked everybody. I shocked everyone in my family." And it was just like, it was, they hadn't been with me for the journey so far. Yeah, so I was guys, this is fine. Will's going to catch the body and we'll just, you know, we don't have the fancy elevator thing.
Oh,
when Will was like, oh yeah, I'll just get in the hole and you can hand them to me. I was like, okay, great.
That's so funny. Cause the whole time in my head, I was like, whoa, like I was thinking about the elevator thing and I was like, what? I guess, wow, we created that because of I had this whole thing of going, holy shit, I'm just like learning that there's all these things that go into funerals for the show of like dignity to the dead, where there was none of that here. And I was like, well, this is like run and gun fucking. Like, it's just a couple of fucking dudes with boots on. Like, it was so hardcore. It was so hardcore. And then, and all of us, family members, in our living rooms or, in our work offices, just watching on the screen. I'm like, this is kind of gnarly. Like, it's really fucking metal.
Yeah, it's pretty metal. Yeah. It was pretty metal. I had to put a pillowcase over my dad's feet when we transferred him from the casket to this tray that they wanted to. Oh my god, you would have laughed so hard. So the funeral director was like not impressed with us at all. In the morning of the burial, when we were getting him from the church, he was like, "Is he being buried in the casket or on the?" Or not. And I was like, well, I haven't had a chance to talk to my brothers about it. He was like, you need to talk to them about it right now. And so they pulled them out of the chapel and Will and Eli and I stood there and had a very urgent conversation about what we were going to do because, you know, Will and I had been in all these conversations about what was legal and Eli wanted to respect dad's wishes and he wanted other people to be able to use this casket, which is fucking illegal, which is stupid. Anyway, so
just because your dad laid in it but wasn't buried in it?
Yeah, you cannot reuse a casket. That's what they said, but you can rent a casket.
No. Yeah, that's you know what that is? I almost fucking guarantee you. I almost fucking guarantee you, because we've gone over this on fucking Sick Boy. That's funeral home bullshittery.
Okay, but funeral homes
do good work, but also funeral homes are fucking
making money.
Scam artists. Yeah. They are also part-time scam artists. So yeah. There's a bunch of shit that you'll be told is illegal.
Yeah.
When it most certainly is not.
Yeah.
And they're going to use the word illegal when it's fully fucking legal. But anyway,
we needed
whatever.
Them
we don't need
to approve
that.
Of our plans before the palliative center would release his body to us. And anyway, we tried to do it without the funeral home. But then when he made that comment, I swear to God, I heard it. Maybe he didn't, but I swear to God, I heard him say, "Next time we should have a rehearsal." He picked up the tray that we had carried. It's called a tray that we had carried Dad from the hearse to the gravesite in. And Will was like, "Can that be used for another body?" And I won't say his name.
Yeah. Oh, I could see your brother saying that way.
Oh,
too.
He was
Dude,
not.
He asked him. He's one of my favorite people to watch. He's so smart and so witty.
Yeah.
And also so like no bullshit.
Yeah. You know what, Todd? Funny. Todd was like, your brother's got a similar sort of thing as like tone as Louis C.K. And I was like, I've always thought that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
He was a blast to have around in the couple of days, emotional, but we had a lot of really good laughs and it was good. It was really good to connect with my brothers in that way. And, you know, just like all my siblings have such a different relationship with my dad. And, you know, I only have mine. And I don't know. I think a really lovely thing about death is it can bring people together. And it certainly has. And, you know, just so wild that my mom ended up taking him in, my dad, you know, for the last bit. And he was so appreciative. And he would just be like, I can't believe that. You know what I just realized, actually, over the weekend?
What?
I am 36 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm the same age my dad was when I was born.
Whoa. That's poetic.
Yeah. I'm exactly half his age. He died at 72.
Crazy.
I know. And it's wild because, you know, I've been hearing more and more and more stories about that time, you know, before I was born and like in the early years of my life and shit I had no idea about. So
your parents back in those days.
Mm-hmm. My dad had corn when he was 22.
I visualize their lives as like a Linkletter film, you know, like I when I watch Dazed and Confused and like the romanticism of that like time period in that film, that's to me is like thinking about, or like when you watch like videos of like Woodstock, you know, and just like the crazy free love, like that whole vibe, like that just I just your parents lived such a interesting life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the kinds of friendship that I see between them has been really profound and
mm-hmm.
Did you ever get the
background on his nickname,
Izzard Goat?
Izzard Goat? Like where that came from or how?
No. I mean, Izzard is his father's name.
Mm-hmm.
Reverend Goat, I'm not sure. But I'm going to find out. I'm conducting a series of interviews with people that were
Izzard
close to him.
Reverend Goat.
Reverend Izzard Goat.
Reverend Izzard Goat.
Yeah. I found a business card in his wallet that says that. That's all.
Really?
Yeah.
It's such a badass. Really, it's such a badass title.
Yeah, I asked him. It was one of the last things I asked him. I realized we didn't talk about what to put on a stone for him, and he wasn't using a lot of sentences at this point. So I just said, "Do you want Izzard on your tombstone?" And he was like, "Yeah," and that was it. We didn't talk. That's all it's gonna say. Well, you know what's also really funny to note is that he's buried next to my grandfather, but not his father. my stepmother's father.
Mm-hmm.
So he and Shirley, my stepmother, have been separated for 10 years. And
10 years?
For 10 years. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when he got sick, she was like, my parents bought us grave plots for Christmas one year. Are you going to use yours? Do you want to use yours? That would be fine. And my dad was like, yeah, that sounds good. So my dad's out, you know, and they were together for 20 years, but mm-hmm. it's just like these women, these different maternal figures in a way for my dad.
Mm.
He told me once he was always looking for a mom. So.
That's really funny.
Yeah. And you know what else? This is the other really, this is the other sort of like, I don't know, connection I'm making with all of this. Something that I've been working on, you know, I've been trying to like work on myself over the last, well, hopefully my whole life, but definitely over the last few months, trying to do some self-work and focus it around my heart. And I was like, okay, let me figure out how to be more of a like a loving partner. Because I can get cold and I can isolate and I can do all these things. So how do I stop doing that? And not only, you know, over the past few months with my dad, am I seeing a lot of like why I might be like that or like where I might have learned that kind of way of love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, but also what's when I said like, okay, universe, I want to learn about my heart. I started noticing this like burning in my where my solar plexus is, mm-hmm. and I finally had it named in this book that I just started reading called Untamed by Glennon Doyle. It's like a book about essentially encouraging people to connect to the wildness that they are. Mm-hmm. Before all of like manners and society and like here's the blueprint for like what you should want and how you should be and how you should get what you want, you know, especially for women. She's a feminist writer. And she talks about the knowing. She talks about God, but she's a Christian, but sort of. And when she talks about God, she's talking about the God of your understanding. So mm-hmm. whatever that is for you. But she talks about it being the knowing. It's like it's in you or your intuition or that voice, essentially that inner voice that I've always heard about. I'm like, what the fuck is that? Like, what do you mean? Listen to your heart. What do you mean? Listen to yourself, like, or listen to your gut or like, what's your gut tell you? Like, but the way that she's described it as this knowing, but it's also the same place for me as what she refers to as the ache. And it's also the place where your nervous system communicates to your digestive system about whether it's safe to rest and digest or whether we're in fight or flight. So when that switches on up closer to your head, you know, if you're perceiving danger, there's that bundle of nerves that's just like tells your guts what to do. And I carry all of my tension in my digestive system, like, or there, maybe it's there. I don't know. All of a sudden, now that I have a location for it and something to call it, I'm like, now it's the same. It's grief. Like grief is there. Like it gets hot. It feels hot. And I realize like I need to relax my stomach. I need to relax my abdominal muscles. And all of a sudden I feel connected. It's so weird. Mm. It's just a practice that has been interwoven into this experience of like COVID-19 as well, but, and my dad. And
is this a book?
Yeah. The book called Untamed.
Untamed. Mm-hmm. And what's her name?
Glennon Doyle.
And you're doing like a book club about this book, aren't you?
Yeah, I started one just like the weekend
just
before.
Plug that?
Yeah, so I started a little reading club with this book. I haven't updated it honestly since my dad passed away, but I'm still loving reading it, and I'm gonna hopefully dive into it a little more actively now that I have the time. I think it's called, how do I switch? I have so many goddamn Instagram profiles. It's just Untamed Reading Club.
All yeah. One word? No. Okay. Yeah.
It has, I mean, it. If you put Untamed Reading Club, it's Untamed_Reading_Club. But yeah, there's 99 followers right now.
Hey, look,
that's
at
pretty
you.
Good.
How about that?
I got some messages, well, some comments to respond to. It's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
It's a cool place to have a conversation. I like it. I'm learning a lot. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say about that. I'm rambling. Can I also say
maybe
one other
we should
thing?
Just leave? Yeah. What? Yeah. Huh?
Huh?
What? Huh? Huh?
Huh? I have one other thing I'd like to say.
Yeah, please do.
Because I've been using this book and this experience as well in the yoga classes that I've been teaching on Sunday mornings.
Why don't you just plug that? Where are you teaching
yeah.
these classes?
So I'm teaching online for Moto Yoga Halifax online. They have online drop-in prices. I believe it's $10 a class, or you can sign up for like a class pass or even a monthly membership. That's been the case at least for the last month. We're gonna have I feel like we're gonna have a game changer of a conversation on Friday when we're having a staff meeting, and I think we're gonna keep on going with this online class thing. I think it's working.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. So anyway, but I've been weaving a lot of, like, I've been trying to process a lot of it through my yoga practice as well. And then also through teaching, and, it's a 30-day challenge. So there's quotes that they give us every day to work with in the practice. And that's been lending itself really nicely to like the experience of all this. But yeah, this river, basically Glennon refers to love, that feeling that I've been trying to feel, which is like a flow of love that comes back and forth without obstacles, without all these, I've described them all my life as walls. Like I just have this wall and I can't get past it and I don't know what it is, and I can see you on the other side. I can see you in conflict, like needing love from me, and I can't fucking give it to you. But as soon as I read her sort of metaphor on the thing of it being a river, and that there's boulders in the river, and sometimes you just need a boulder remover, which I love, because there is a flow there. It's not the full expression of the flow, but it's organic. It's got boulders in it, you know? And so I think through this whole process of losing my dad, I've been really struggling with the balance of like being a partner and being a caretaker, being this like maternal place, you know, in the days with my dad, and then being like a feminine, like lover place. It's just like, you know, it hasn't been working. But when my dad went into the hospital and I started shaking my body a lot more and like doing a lot of more somatic movement, and like voice work and a letting emotion come out on my voice, I think it's been a bit of a boulder removal. Like I think I feel all of a sudden like letting my heart be open to feeling the depth of my feelings whenever they come, about my dad especially, is like it's made the other kind of love more easy and easeful to express. I don't know why. I haven't quite made it all match up, but I know it's connected.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. You know, it's like when a lot of times when we start to like notice that our mental health is like slipping, you know, I don't want to like put out a blanket statement here because that wouldn't be true. But for a lot of people, when they lose touch with their need and their desire to be physically, emotive and like, and physically active and reconnect with movement in some way in their life, it creates so much more space for mental clarity and for their mental health to like thrive. Mm. You know? And so it makes total sense that this exploration that you've taken into physical movement and how that's like, again, offered you space, maybe not so much in the realm of like mental health, but more so in just mental clarity, in being able to tap into the different like emotional sides of yourself.
I think giving them a physical expression or an external expression, whether it's movement or vocalizing, is like, I felt it's so light.
It's such a release. It's like, I remember one time taking a class from Ted, our brother-in-law and teacher of ours, and him talking about how, you know, if you've ever seen a dog that's under stress and it shakes its whole body and like its head, its body, it does this whole like sort of barrel, like rotational shake back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And their ears are flapping. That's like a dog's version of a sigh, you know, this like sigh of like release, like letting go of like the built up tension or pressure of stress or whatever. And how we as humans, that like our version of that is, you know, like when we're angry, we sigh. When we're really sad, we sigh. When we're like overwhelmed with elation, we sigh. It's a way for us to like, to release, to let go, to kind of reset. It's that reset button. And so, that really resonates with me because I get it. I get that sensation. I know what, when Ted says that, I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. Like, I get that. I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, of course, like in these times of great distress or, you know, like mental fog where we're inundated with fucking, you know, people dying in nursing homes and being stuck in our houses and, you know, our father who's end stage cancer and dying and trying to figure out like how the fuck we're going to make ends meet. Like we're just in survival mode, you know, and how easy it is to like get caught up in all of that and not find the way that we need to press that reset button, not find the way, because a simple sigh is not going to do it. You know, there needs to be some sort of like greater expression of release.
Yeah.
I think it totally makes sense.
Yeah. It just, I'm listening to that and I'm just thinking of everybody, you know, who has never experienced that. Being a way to, you know, like we think about shouting or yelling or screaming as being sort of like, maybe like, oh, I don't want to do that. That seems a bit much.
Oh my but God, actually, screaming into a pillow, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, but there's so good.
There's a great vulnerability in also just sighing and letting your voice shake as, you know, or like humming and hearing the tremble in your own voice if you are emotional. I think that is a really nice gift if you can appreciate it, is like if you start humming through discomfort, and then you can feel physically, you can hear it in the vibration and feel it in the vibration of your body eventually giving over to something that it has been fighting, maybe, or trying to contain. Or, you know, I think of it almost like yin yoga, just like long, slow, patient hold, and then you go, your whole body just sinks into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm really enchanted, actually, by the whole experience of having been here, and I am also aware that death doesn't always look like this, and it would be a very different thing if any number of factors were different. But I'm so grateful to my dad for his spiritual existence. My mom says, you know, he's always been spiritual, and he was really committed to it right through the end. And I don't mean like committed to the Bible or Jesus or Christianity or anything, but he was committed to this is my transition. This is my metamorphosis. This is the next part of the journey, you know? And I want to do the work on myself to feel, to be able to walk into death with that. Because I tell myself, yeah, you know, I just saw all that and I was there and I could stomach it. So I'm not scared of death, but I have had, you know, over the past week since he's passed, I have had some deep moments of fear.
About your own death?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's probably a gift too. So I'm going to spend some time with that the next time it surfaces. I'm going to sit and process it with pen and paper, maybe some movement, maybe some sound. But, you know, it's just life is such a wild roller coaster. And you can't be like, yeah, I've processed and I've grieved and now moving on. It's like, you know, I'll probably burst into tears spontaneously about this in a year. But I think it's also provided me the ability to experience a more joyful love as well for the people that I used to put walls up around, myself around. The love monsters in my life that, like Tara. And you.
I'm a bit of a love monster sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Your hair looks great right now.
Dude,
I'm
a huge
fan of shaggy hair.
Long. Yeah.
Shaggy hair.
I love you.
I love you too. Thanks for, I don't know if I said this, but when you were on the Zoom call and I knew that things were about
the Zoom funeral.
The Zoom funeral, and I knew things were about to get a little hairy for me in terms of like I wasn't going to be able to record it, I promised I would, and like narrate it, and this such a small thing, but it meant so much that I was like, I just knew you would take care of it, and I just same as the boys, like jumping in, and even Todd too. Like he was like, does it matter? Should I get dressed up? I'm like, no, just wear your work pants with paint on them. Like I really was like, yeah. My dad, you know, I'm not dressing up either. But then instead of me carrying the tray, all of a sudden I was hosting a Zoom funeral. And so Todd just is like, Oh, they were like, you over here. And he was like, okay. And I was like, this is so fucking awesome for me to not be the decision. Like I can just go, hey guys, can you just take care of it?
Yeah.
And it happened. And I was so, so grateful for you. That whole afternoon I was thinking about wanting to tell you that. So,
thanks, babe.
Thank you.
I'm glad I got to be a part of it in some way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Shirley told me, my stepmother told me that she thought I'm amazing. She thinks I turned out amazing. That's what she said.
I think she's not wrong.
You know, I'm just looking for validation also. Yeah, you know,
pretty great. We didn't talk about sex really, and that's okay. And I think that this was one of my favorite conversations that we've ever had on this podcast. And I can't wait to put it out there. And I think that people need to hear this, these types of conversations.
Yeah,
because they're important.
Let's learn how to love more fully.
Yeah.
Even though fucking hurts then.
Man, even though it fucking hurts. You know, I wasn't going to say this. You know what? We have a segment on the show called Just the Tips where we share tips, things to for people to check out. And I got to tell you, Bride, years ago, like fucking years ago, like 7 years ago, maybe, you were like, you should check out Duncan Trussell's podcast. And I really like Duncan Trussell every time I hear him on other podcasts. And I kind of slept on it for a while. And then I started listening to it and I was like, this is pretty cool. And then he put out a show on Netflix. So this is my Just the Tips for this week. All right. Okay. He put out a show on Netflix called The Midnight Gospel. And it's the same, co-created with the same guy who made Adventure Time. And I love cartoons. I love anime. I really enjoy Adventure Time. So I was really excited to see the blend of Duncan Trussell and Pendleton, the guy, Pendleton Ward, who does Adventure Time. But the idea of the show is that they take conversations from Duncan Trussell Family Hour, the podcast, and they bring those conversations to life through animation. But they set these animations around this sort of like this made up universe where Duncan Trussell's character Clancy is using this like machine to travel to through the multiverse to different universes and meet these people. And so they take the conversations that he's had on his podcast with guests and they sort of build this world around them. And so you're listening to mostly that conversation, but then they'll also like, you know, they'll veer off into conversations that their characters are having within that world that actually weren't recorded during the recording, if that makes any sense. Anyway, primarily it's a show of animations of the conversations that he's had on his podcast. And I blew through this thing. I had to limit myself to two episodes per day because I fell in love with it so immediately, so quickly, so intensely that I knew I was going to get like fucking really sad when it was over. And there was only 9 episodes. And if you haven't taken the time to watch it, I highly, highly suggest it. The first episode, you might be like, this is fucking chaos. I don't know if I can handle it, but just give it a couple of episodes. Because I swear to fucking God, by the 9th episode, it's one of the most like special things I've ever watched. I don't want to give spoilers away. Ah, fuck it. Whatever. This is in line with what we were talking about here. Little spoiler alert. It's a conversation that he has with his mother, Duncan's mother. So that's the conversation that they're doing on this particular episode, on episode 9. But the recording of the podcast when Duncan had this conversation with his mom, they recorded that while she was dying of cancer, and it was actually recorded like a few weeks before she passed away. And it's such a beautiful conversation. And, you know, the conversation, the themes of the conversation are, you know, what it means to love and what it means to lose a loved one and the cost of grief and just the importance of meditating on your own death, which I think is like a lot of the themes within Duncan Trussell's show anyway. You know, it's like it's a lot of he's very big on like meditation and you know, existential thoughts on life and death. And anyway, this fucking show is like the most, it's just the most wonderful thing. And I think it's honestly like come out at the most perfect time, you know, this time where we're like, we're stuck in our fucking homes and we're stuck with our fucking thoughts. And, you know, we're all experiencing shit on top of the shit that we're all currently experiencing together. And, I don't know. It's just like a great piece of art that truly, I think like, well, if you really sit with it, will like make you think and think about things that are really valuable. Anyway, now I'm on this fucking hardcore Duncan Trussell Family Hour kick. And I'm just like, what a guy, man. What a show.
I can't imagine what it's like inside his head.
Holy fuck. I know. Yeah. He's my favorite cool. Right now.
That's a good just so anyway, the tip.
That's my just the tip. Go check that out.
And mine, we'll just say, is Untamed by Glennon Doyle. I think worth reading, whether you're a person with a vagina or not. I think there's some really interesting stuff in there that is worth reading. Just, you know, it's a nice, it's a good, easy read. Digestible, let's say. Mm. And come join my book club and tell me your favorite moments.
Thank you all for taking the time to sit down and listen to us talk about death and grief. And we love you, and we hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll be back next week with a regular episode of Turn Me On Podcast, where we just talk about just, you know, freaks and geeks. All y'all freaks out there. Actually, I think next week's episode, we're literally talking to a guy whose life revolves around very realistic life sex dolls.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that to look forward to next week. But in the meantime, Apple Podcasts, leave a rating, leave a review, go to patreon.com/turnmeon and support the podcast, help keep this podcast alive. And we love all of our patrons. We thank all of our patrons.
Thank you.
And if you want to reach out, you know, we call them brain boners, where we answer questions or give non-professional advice about your sex life or your relationships or whatever. You can email us at turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com.
We know other things too. If you have other questions, we can.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And if you want to show the world your sweet, sweet cheeks, Instagram @turnmeonpodcast. You can send us a picture of your butt. And we'll anonymously post it for you,
mm-hmm.
with some sort of quote.
Inspiring quote. Mm-hmm. And you can email us at turnmeonpodcast@gmail.com or find us on our website. There's a couple of submission forms there. Again, for a brain boner, if you want to be a guest on the show, turnmeonpodcast.com. Let's thank our musical folks on the episode, Emily Sorey, and with the opening track, and Rich O'Coin. Is he still bringing us out?
Yeah. Well, no. Rich. We use Rich's music to throw us into the guest recording. So Rich won't be on here today. But he's no. But he's usually on here. We love you, Rich.
Yeah. I hope you're doing well in quarantine.
Yeah. You know, he is. I'm playing Call of Duty with him every couple of days.
Oh,
so.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Emily, sorry, I heard you on the radio the other day. You sound great. Transcripts of our episodes can be found on Fissin.
Mm-hmm.
The link is in the show notes. If you know someone who would like rather not listen to the sounds of our voice but still think we have interesting things to say.
That is it for this week.
Until next week.
Go fuck yourself. We'll be right back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.